I lived my life alone, without anyone that I could really talk to until I had an accident with my plane in the desert of Sahara 6 years ago. Something was broken in my engine, and as I had with me neither a mechanic nor any passengers, I set myself to attempt the difficult repairs all alone. It was a question of life or death for me. I had scarcely enough drinking water to last a week. The first night then, I went to sleep on the sand, 1,000 miles from any human habitation. I was more isolated than a shipwrecked sailor on a raft in the middle of the ocean. Thus, you can imagine my amazement at sunrise when I was awakened by an odd little voice.
If you please, draw me a sheep.
What?
Draw me a sheep.
I jumped to my feet, completely thunderstruck. I blinked my eyes hard. I looked carefully all around me, and I saw a most extraordinary small person who stood there examining me with great seriousness. Now I stared at this sudden apparition with my eyes fairly starting out of my head in astonishment, and yet my little man seemed neither to be straying uncertainly among the sands, nor to be fainting from fatigue or hunger or thirst or fear. Nothing about him gave any suggestion of a child lost in the middle of the desert, 1,000 miles from any human habitation. When at last I was able to speak, I said to him, "But what are you doing here?"
"If you please, draw me a sheep."
So then I made a drawing. He looked at it carefully.
"No, the sheep is already very sickly. Make me another."
So I made another drawing.
"This one is too old. I want a sheep that will live a long time. I need him to eat small bushes before they become large baobab trees that will bore clear through my small planet and split it into pieces."
By this time, my patience was exhausted because I was in a hurry to start taking my engine apart. So I drew this drawing. "This is only his box. The sheep you asked for is inside."
"That is exactly the way I wanted it. Do you think this sheep will have to have a great deal of grass? Because where I live, everything is very small."
"There will surely be enough grass for him. It is a very small sheep that I've given you."
"Not so small that... Look, he has gone to sleep."
It was from words dropped by chance that, little by little, everything was revealed to me. The first time he saw my airplane, for instance.
"What is that object?"
"That is not an object. It flies. It is an airplane. It is my airplane."
"What? You dropped down from the sky?"
"Yes."
"That is funny. So you do come from the sky, which is your planet."
"My little man, where do you come from? What is this where I live of which you speak? Where do you want to take your sheep?"
But where do you think he would go?"
"Anywhere, straight ahead of him."
"That doesn't matter. Where I live, everything is so small. Straight ahead. Nobody can go very far."
I had thus learned a second fact of great importance. This was that the planet the little prince came from was scarcely any larger than a house. I have serious reason to believe that the planet from which the little prince came is the asteroid known as B612. If I've told you these details about the asteroid and made a note of its number for you, it is on account of the grown-ups and their ways. Grown-ups love figures. If you were to say to the grown-ups, "I saw a beautiful house made of rosy brick with geraniums in the windows and doves on the roof," they would not be able to get any idea of that house at all. But if you would say to them, "I saw a house that cost $50,000, Then they will exclaim, "Oh, what a pretty house that is." One must not hold it against them. Children should always show great forbearance towards grown-up people. On the fifth day, thanks to the sheep, the secret of the little prince's life was revealed to me. Abruptly, without anything to lead up to it, and as if the question had been born of long and silent meditation on his problem, he demanded,
"A sheep, if it eats little bushes, does it eat flowers too?"
"Well, a sheep eats anything it finds in its reach."
"Even flowers that have thorns?"
"Yes, even flowers that have thorns."
"But then the thorns, what use are they?"
I did not know. At that moment, I was very busy trying to unscrew a bolt that had got stuck in my engine. I was very much worried, for it was becoming clear to me that the breakdown of my plane was extremely serious, and I had so little drinking water left that I had to fear the worst.
"The thorns, what use are they?"
"The thorns are no use at all. Flowers have thorns just for spite."
"I don't believe you. Flowers are weak creatures. They are naive. They reassure themselves as best they can. They believe that their thorns are terrible weapons. And you actually believe..."
No. I don't believe anything. I answered you with the first thing that came into my head. Don't you see? I'm very busy with matters of consequence."
"Matters of consequence? You confuse everything. I know a planet where there's a certain red-faced gentleman. He has never smelled a flower. He has never done anything in his life but add up figures. And all day he says over and over, just like you, 'I am busy with matters of consequence.' And that makes him swell up with pride. But he's not a man. He's a mushroom."
"A what?"
"A mushroom. Is it not a matter of consequence to try to understand why the flowers go to so much trouble to grow thorns which are never of any use to them? And if I know, I, myself, one flower, which is unique in the world, which grows nowhere but on my planet, but which one little sheep can destroy in a single bitesome morning without even noticing what he is doing? Oh, you think that is not important?"
I let my tools drop from my hands. I took him in my arms and rocked him and said to him, "The flower that you love is not in danger. I will draw you a muzzle for your sheep. I will draw you a rail and put around your flower. I did not know what to say to him. I felt awkward and blundering. I did not know how I could reach him. It is such a secret place, the land of tears. I soon learned to know this flower better. On the little prince's planet, the flowers had always been very simple. They'd only one ring of petals. They took up no room at all. They were a trouble to nobody. One morning they would appear in the grass, and by night they would have faded peacefully away. But one day, from a seed blown from no one knew where, a new flower had come up, and the little prince had watched very closely over this small sprout, which was not like any other small sprouts on his planet. Then one morning, exactly at sunrise, she suddenly showed herself to the little prince.
"I'm scarcely awake. I beg that you will excuse me. My petals are still all disarranged."
"Oh, how beautiful you are!"
"Am I not? And I was born at the same moment as the sun."
The little prince could guess easily enough that she was not any too modest. But how moving.
"I think it is time for my breakfast. If you would have the kindness to think of my needs."
And the little prince, completely abashed, went to look for a sprinkling can of fresh water. So he tended the flower. So too she began very quickly to torment him with her vanity, which was, if the truth be told, a little difficult to deal with. One day, for instance, when she was speaking of the four thorns, she said to the little prince,
"Let the tigers come with their claws."
"There are no tigers on my planet. And anyway, tigers do not eat weeds."
"I am not a weed."
"Oh, please excuse me.
I am not at all afraid of tigers. But I have a horror of drafts. I suppose you wouldn't have a screen for me?"
"Horror of drafts? That is bad luck for a plant."
"At night, I want you to put me under a glass globe. It is very cold where you live."
The little prince confided to me one day.
"I ought not to have listened to her. One never ought to listen to the flowers. One should simply look at them and breathe their fragrance. The fact is that I did not know how to understand anything. I ought to have judged by deeds and not by words. She cast a fragrance and her radiance over me. I ought never to have run away from her. I ought to have guessed all the affection that lay behind her poor little stratagems. But I was too young to know how to love her."
I believe that for his escape, he took advantage of the migration of a flock of wild birds. On the morning of his departure, he put his planet in perfect order. The little prince believed that he would never want to return. But on this last morning, all these familiar tasks seemed very precious to him. And when he watered the flower for the last time and prepared to place her under the shelter of a glass globe, he realized that he was very close to tears.
"Goodbye, little flower. Goodbye."
"I have been very silly. I ask your forgiveness. Try to be happy."
He stood there, all bewildered, the glass globe held in midair. He did not understand this quiet sweetness.
"Of course I love you. It is my fault that you have not known it all the while. That is of no importance, but you have been just as foolish as I. Try to be happy. Let the glass globe be. I don't want it anymore. Why, don't linger like this. You have decided to go away, so now go."
The little prince found himself in the neighborhood of the asteroids 325, 326, 327, 328, 329, and 330. He began, therefore, by visiting them in order to add to his knowledge. The first of them was inhabited by a king, clad in royal purple and ermine. He was seated upon a throne which was at the same time both simple and majestic.
"Ah, it is a subject."
"How could he recognize me when he'd never seen me before?"
"He didn't know how the world is simplified for kings. To them, all men are subjects."
"Okay, approach so that I may see you better."
The little prince looked everywhere to find a place to sit down, but the entire planet was crammed and obstructed by the king's magnificent ermine robe. So he remained standing upright, and since he was tired, he yawned.
It is contrary to etiquette to yawn in the presence of a king. I must say, I forbid you to do so."
"I can't help it. I can't stop myself. I have come on a long journey, and I have had no sleep."
"Ah, all right then. I order you to yawn. You know, it's years since I've seen anyone here yawning. Yawns to me are objects of curiosity. Come now, yawn again. That's an order."
"That frightens me. I cannot anymore. May I sit down?"
I order you to do so. Yes, please."
"Sire, I beg that you will excuse my asking you a question."
"I order you to ask me a question."
"Sire, over what do you rule?"
Why, literally over everything."
"Over everything?"
Yes, over my planet, the other planets, and for that matter, all the stars."
"And the stars obey you?"
"Certainly they do. They obey instantly. I do not permit insubordination."
"Oh, I should, like to see a sunset. Do me that kindness. Order the sun to set.
If I ordered a general to fly from one flower to another like a butterfly, or to write a tragic drama, or to change himself into a seabird, and if the general did not carry out the order that he had received, which one of us would be in the wrong? The general or myself?
You.
Exactly. One must require from each one the duty which each one can perform. Accepted authority rests first of all on reason. If you ordered your people to go and throw themselves into the sea, why, you can imagine they'd rise up in revolution. I have the right to require obedience because my orders are, they're reasonable.
Then my sunset.
You shall have your sunset. I shall command it, oh yes, but according to my science of government, I shall have to wait until conditions are favorable.
When will that be?
Well, that'd be that'd be this evening, yes, about 20 minutes to 8. And you'll see right then and there how well I'm obeyed.
I have nothing more to do.
Wait, here. Don't go. No, don't go away. I'll make you a minister.
Minister of what?
The minister of justice.
But there is nobody here to judge.
Then you shall judge yourself. That's, the most difficult thing of all. It is much more difficult to judge oneself than to judge others. I mean, if you succeed in judging yourself right, then you are indeed a man of true wisdom.
Yes, but I can judge myself anywhere. I do not need to live on this planet.
I have good reason to believe that somewhere on my planet there's an old rat. I hear him at night. You can judge this old rat, yes. And from time to time, you will condemn him to death. Thus, his life will depend on your justice. But you will pardon him on each occasion, for he must be treated thriftily. He's the only one we have.
I do not like to condemn anyone to death. And now I think I will go on my way.
No!
If your majesty wishes to be promptly obeyed, he should be able to give me a reasonable order. He should be able, for example, to order me to be gone by the end of 1 minute. It seems to me that conditions are favorable.
I make you my ambassador!
The grown-ups are very strange.
The second planet was inhabited by a conceited man.
Oh, I'm about to receive a visit from an admirer.
For to conceited men, all other men are admirers.
Good morning. That is a queer hat you are wearing.
It is a hat for salutes. It is to raise and salute when people acclaim me. Unfortunately, nobody at all ever passes this way.
Yes, said the little prince, who did not understand who the conceited man was talking about.
Clap your hands, one against the other.
The little prince clapped his hands. The conceited man raised his hat in a modest salute.
This is more entertaining than the visit to the king. And what should one do to make the hat come down?
But the conceited man did not hear him. Conceited people never hear anything but praise.
Do you really admire me so very much?
What does that mean, admire?
To admire means that you regard me as the handsomest, the best-dressed, the richest, and the most intelligent man on this planet.
But you are the only man on your planet.
Do me this kindness. Admire me just the same.
I admire you, but what is there in that to interest you so much? I will go away. The grown-ups are certainly very odd.
The next planet was inhabited by a tippler. This was a very short visit, but it plunged the little prince into deep dejection.
What are you doing there?
I am drinking.
Why are you drinking?
So that I may forget.
Forget what?
Forget that I am ashamed.
Ashamed of what?
Ashamed of drinking.
The tippler brought his speech to an end, and the little prince went away puzzled. Now, the fourth planet belonged to a businessman. This man was so occupied that he did not even raise his head at the little prince's arrival.
Good morning. Your cigarette has gone out.
Huh? Oh, you still there, boy? 800, 400, 450 million. I'm concerned with matters of consequence. I don't amuse myself with balderdash. 501 million.
501 million what?
During the 54 years I've inhabited this planet, boy, I've been disturbed only three times. The first time was 22 years ago when some giddy goose fell from goodness knows where. He made the most frightful noise that resounded all over the place, and I made four mistakes in my addition. And the second time, 11 years ago, I was disturbed by an attack of rheumatism. I don't get enough exercise, son. I've no time for loafing. And the third time, this is it. I see, 501
millions. Millions of what?
Millions of those little objects that one sometimes sees in the big sky.
Flies?
No, son. Little glittering objects.
Bees!
No bees sting you. Little golden objects that set lazy men to idle dreaming. As for me, I'm concerned with matters of consequence. There's not time for idle dreaming in my life.
Ah, you mean the stars. And what do you do with all those stars?
What do I do with them? Nothing. I own them.
You own the stars?
Yes.
But I have already seen a king who...
Son, kings do not own, they reign over. It's a very different matter.
And what good does it do you to own the stars?
It does me the good of making me rich.
And what good does it do you to be rich?
It makes it possible for me to buy more stars, if any are discovered.
How is it possible for one to own the stars?
What, to whom do they belong?
I don't know. To nobody.
Then they belong to me, because I was the person to think of it.
Is that all that is necessary?
Well, certainly when you find a diamond that belongs to nobody, it is yours. When you discover an island that belongs to nobody, it is yours. When you get an idea before anyone else, you take out a patent on it, it is yours. So with me, I own the stars because nobody else before me ever thought of owning them.
Yes, that is true. And what do you do with them?
I administer them. I count them and I recount them. It is difficult, but I'm a man who's naturally interested in matters of consequence.
If I owned a silk scarf, I could put it around my neck and take it away with me. But you cannot pluck the stars from heaven.
No, son. But I can put them in the bank.
Whatever does that mean?
That means that I write the number of my stars on a little paper. And then I put this paper in a drawer, and I lock it with a key.
And that is all?
That is enough. That is enough.
It is entertaining. It is rather poetic. But it is of no great consequence. I will go away. The grown-ups are certainly altogether extraordinary.
The fifth planet was very strange. It was the smallest of all. There was just enough room on it for a street lamp and a lamplighter. The little prince was not able to reach any explanation of the use of a street lamp and a lamplighter somewhere in the heavens on a planet which had no people and not one house.
Good morning, Mr. Lamplighter. Why have you just put out your lamp?
Those are the orders. Good morning.
What are the orders?
Oh, the orders are the day that I put out my lamp. Good evening.
But why have you just lighted it again?
Those are the orders.
Oh, I do not understand.
There is nothing to understand. Orders are orders. I follow a terrible profession. In the old days, it was reasonable. I put the lamp out in the morning, and in the evening, I lighted it again. I had the rest of the day for relaxation, and the rest of the night for sleep.
And the orders have been changed since that time?
The orders have not been changed. That is the tragedy. From year to year, the planet has turned more rapidly, and the orders have not been changed.
Oh?
The planet now makes a complete turn every minute, and I no longer have a single second for repose. Once every minute, I have to light my lamp and put it out.
That is very funny. A day lasts only 1 minute here where you live.
It is not funny at all. While we have been talking together, a month has gone by.
A month?
Yes, a month. 30 minutes. 30 days. Good evening.
You know, I can tell you a way you can rest whenever you want to.
I always want to rest.
Your planet is so small that 3 strides will take you all the way around it. To be always in the sunshine, you need only walk along rather slowly, and the day will last as long as you like.
That doesn't do me much good. The one thing I love in life is to sleep.
Then you're unlucky.
I am unlucky. Good morning.
And he put out his lamp.
That man is the only one of them all whom I could have made my friend. But his planet is indeed too small. There is no room on it for 2 people.
The 6th planet was 10 times larger than the last one. It was inhabited by an old gentleman who wrote voluminous books.
Oh, look. Here is an explorer. Where do you come from?
What is that big book? What are you doing?
I am a geographer.
What is a geographer?
A geographer is a scholar who knows the location of all the seas, rivers, towns, mountains, and deserts.
That is very interesting. Here at last is a man who has a real profession. Your planet is very beautiful. Has it any oceans?
I couldn't tell you.
Has it any mountains?
I couldn't tell you.
And towns and rivers and deserts?
I couldn't tell you that either.
But you are a geographer.
Exactly. But I am not an explorer. I haven't a single explorer on my planet. It is not the geographer who goes up to count the towns, the rivers, the mountains, the seas, the oceans, and the deserts. The geographer is much too important to go loafing about. He does not leave his desk, but he receives the explorers in his study. He asks them questions, and he notes down what they recall of their travels. And if the recollections of any one among them seem interesting to him, the geographer orders an inquiry into that explorer's moral character.
Why is that?
Because an explorer who told lies would bring disaster on the books of the geographer. So would an explorer who drank too much.
And why is that?
Because intoxicated men see double. Then the geographer would note down 2 mountains in a place where there was only one.
I know someone who would make a bad explorer.
But you come from far away. You are an explorer. You should describe your planet to me.
Oh, where I live, it is not very interesting. It is so small. I have 3 volcanoes. And I also have a flower.
We do not record flowers.
Why is that? The flower is the most beautiful thing on my planet.
We do not record them because they are ephemeral.
What does that mean, ephemeral?
It means which is in danger of speedy disappearance.
Is my flower in danger of speedy disappearance?
Certainly it is.
My flower is ephemeral. And she has only 4 thorns to defend herself against the world. And I left her on my planet all alone. Me to visit now?
The planet Earth. It has a good reputation.